Hi, everyone. I'm an addict. My name is Deborah. And I'm glad to be here. Last year was our first year here, and Art calls us back to come and give our experience, strength, and hope. So here we are once again. You know, and I'm grateful to see friendly faces that you know, during your travels and on this journey of recovery. I'm always meeting people all the time and going to conventions and doing workshops, being of service, you know. I like to be of service. I like to give back, you know, because I've taken for so long. You know, that's all I ever did was took. What about me? What about me? What about me? And when I'm asked to give my experience, strength, and hope, I'm always excited. It's an honor and it's a privilege that anybody wants to hear anything that I have to say today. You know, before, didn't nobody want to hear anything. They just wanted to know what I could do, you know. And the topic is, the drugs don't kill me, the lifestyle will. Well, fortunately, the drugs didn't kill me. Fortunately, my lifestyle didn't kill me. You know, I prostituted myself for many, many, many years in Manhattan and in Toronto and a lot of major cities. And I'm so grateful. I have a disease of addiction. I don't have other diseases, and I'm grateful for that because of my lifestyle. I mean, I prostituted myself so that I could live to use and use to live. And that was my way of life, you know. So I'm grateful that my lifestyle and active addiction didn't kill me or cause me to have multiple diseases. You know, I have the disease of addiction, and I need to be grateful for that, you know, because there's a solution for that just for today. You know, and it's the program of Narcotics Anonymous. So for that alone, I'm grateful for that disease. Not a problem. You know, they say go to a meeting, say a prayer, and just not use. You know, get a sponsor, do the step work. That's the way I combat the disease of addiction. Okay, I can do that. I'll take those suggestions. I don't know. I always like to open up with some type of prayer, and I do like the introduction prayer. I know it says, God grant me the knowledge that I may write, but I also ask him to grant me the knowledge that I may live according to his divine precepts, instill in me a sense of his purpose, make me a servant of his will, and grant me a bond of selflessness that this may truly be his work, not mine, in order that no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. And I was sitting here and I heard somebody say, it's a selfish program. I'm like, not in the NA fellowship. It's not, you know, we do selfless service, you know. So I think of myself less, and it's like I always get more, you know. So I don't know. A lot of things can kill me today. I struggle, and I just need to share this. I struggle with my eating. I do. My husband's diabetic. You know, and like this morning, I ran from our little cabin down to the mess hall. You know, I'll do that, and I'll exercise real good. But I can't stay away from the Häagen-Dazs, and we have this sweet tooth in our area. And stuff like that kills me because it's like using the drugs. You know, the drugs was just a symptom, you know. My disease manifested itself in so many other areas of my life. And it's like food is out to kill me. You know, and if I'm not careful, I can find myself in a fetal position eating food. You know, that's a part of my lifestyle. I remember early on in my recovery process, I still wanted to, like, exotic dance, and, you know, I still wanted to pick up tricks and all this stuff. I'm like, I'm clean now. Guess what? I don't have to use the dope. I can do this successfully now. You know, it'll happen for me successfully. You know, I can do it. And I find myself once again wanting to drink, you know, after going back. Because I had a sponsor that said, you know, when the pain gets great enough, you'll do something different. That's what she told me. Or she was like, well, do all 12 steps and then see how you feel. See if you still want to do that. You know, and I did that, and it turned out that, no, I didn't want to live that way. But, you know, you couldn't tell me anything. You know, you couldn't tell me anything early on in recovery. You couldn't tell me shit. I really didn't want to listen to the predecessors. You know, it's like, you guys don't know. You don't like me. You're jealous of me. You know, all this other stuff. And they were like, we're going to love you until you learn to love yourself. You know, because it's obvious that you don't. You know, so keep coming back and more will be revealed. You know, and what was revealed to me was that I didn't love me because I was still doing things to harm and to hurt me. You know, I was still stealing, you know, 8, 9 years clean. I went to jail for stealing some feathers. I was, my husband and I were, we were hosting this in a gong show, if you will, and I wanted to have this real funky way out outfit on, and I didn't have the money to get it, but my girlfriend said she would make it for me, so I went to the store and I stole some feathers, you know, and if you put feathers in your pocket, you can't steal them, so I'm patting around, 9 years clean, I'm patting around my pocket trying to steal feathers like I used to do with the crack. You know, a drug is a drug. I don't like to talk about the, you know. And I'm in the store, and the lady said, excuse me, what do you have in your pocket? I'm like, cool, me? So I'm stealing these feathers, you know, trying to be in some type of lifestyle that I should have left a long time ago. We're 9 years clean. You know, so it talks about that the drugs don't kill you, the lifestyle. Well, that killed me because I didn't have children in active addiction because I aborted them all. I aborted anything that looked like it was coming out to be a human being. I just did because that got in the way of my using. Anything that looked like it got in the way of me getting high or me traveling and taking my act on the road because you take you with you, you got to go. You know, you can't be a part of me because this is not a part of my lifestyle. You know, a baby wasn't nowhere in the picture. You know, it was getting money and getting high and in that order. You know, it was getting money and getting high and in that order, you know. So I ended up going to jail for 8 days, you know, with 9 years clean, with a son. And I used to sit and I used to really compare myself to the women who had children in active addiction. I said, wow, well, that's not my story. You know, I would hear women sit and talk about how they abandoned their kids in active addiction. You know, I'm sorry, the welfare ahead of the use of the family, the wives, the husbands, the kids. I'm like, well, I didn't have kids. You know, I just left it at that. You know, until I went to jail for 8 days and I had a son that was 5 years old and he says, where's mommy? And mommy wasn't there. I then had the experience with abandoning my child. You know, he would run to the door or to the window and ask my husband, when is mommy coming home? And then we had to lie and say I was in school somewhere. I went on a school project or some shit. 9 years clean. Stealing feathers. Had money in my pocket. Had money in my pocket. Was not willing to change. Was not willing to change. You know, that same old lifestyle stuff that I brought into the program in Narcotics Anonymous with me. You know, and I say this to anybody, especially the women that I sponsor, is that this stuff comes slowly over a period of time, but there comes a time when we have to change. You know, recovery is a profound change on my thinking. I thought I could get away with the feathers, like, okay, you guys aren't going to, that's, it's not an obvious symptom that I'm stealing. You know, we go from, you know, the purse snatching junkie to the little old lady, the sweet little old lady. You know, the obvious was the purse snatching junkie. You knew I was getting high. In recovery today, I turned into the sweet little old lady. No, not Debbie. Oh, she got braces on. Oh, she's so nice. Oh, you know, bullshit. Bullshit. It's a bunch of bullshit. It is. You know, because, and then we learn as addicts because we're so extraordinary. We're extraordinary people, you know, to having survived the horrors of addiction. I mean, you know, it's like, I always like to say it's the Twin Towers type of thing. You know, we survived a near fatal catastrophe. If you were up there in the Twin Towers and we were all thrust together in there and we were all running down them stairs and made it out, we would greet each other like that every time we saw each other, despite, you know, in spite of who we are or who you are. We would greet each other like, hey, I grabbed your arm. You know, because I often think about that, you know, the people that were lost and the people that survived, you know, the survivors. We're the survivors. You know, we're the survivors. So I need to be careful about my lifestyle, the things that I still choose to do, going permanently insane in recovery, going permanently insane in recovery. I shared this the other day, and somebody came behind me and shared, and it's like, you know, having too much on your plate. Well, when you didn't put any of the stuff on your plate, where is that coming from? You know, there is a difference. If I put all this shit on my plate, then maybe I need to eliminate some stuff. But if God put this stuff on your plate, you know, without your permission, come on. Give me a break. You know what I'm saying? And it gets overwhelming. I have a sister who's incarcerated right now. She get out Wednesday, and that's a beautiful thing, as a direct result of getting high. I have a mother that's a stroke survivor, but she's in a nursing home because she still can't walk. So I'm the daughter that's left to do everything. And then I have a niece that's 22 years old that's in a mental institution. I went to see her. They had her strapped down, and she's like out of her mind. I'm like, wow. And this is a sister that's in jail. So I'm the aunt that need to be there for everybody. And then I'm like, okay, Deb, you got to take care of you. If not, you'll be in the hospital too. What's the difference? What's the difference? There is none. So I have to maintain a certain type of lifestyle. You know, I had a sponsee that took me to bingo with her, and I bingo for $100. I said, oh, this is some bullshit. This is a setup. I will not be back to fucking bingo, and you cannot get me to go to a casino. This is bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you cannot get me to go to the casino. This is a trap. Because I know me. I'm an addict. Anything I start obsessing and compulsing over, forget about it. Forget about it. You know, don't even go there. So the guy is like, oh, you'll be back. I'm like, fuck you. No, I won't. And I didn't, and I haven't, because guess what? That can be a part of a very addictive person. I have a very addictive personality. I'm an addict. So don't start giving me stuff that makes me feel good. Because guess what? Once I start feeling good behind some stuff, forget about it. So, no, me bingoing for $100, okay, that's good. I spent $20 and I bingo for $100. Oh, you'll be back. That's the newcomer. You know, they start calling me a newcomer. That's what happens to everybody. You'll be back. I'm like, this is not Narcotics Anonymous. You all have lost your mind. You know, no, because I could see me. I have friends. I can learn from others' experiences with that stuff. I have girlfriends that have their houses in foreclosure. I'm like, I'm not getting ready to lose my damn house behind this stuff. Go run into the casino. You know, I'm not going to do it. So, no. We went to the casino the other day and had breakfast, you know, and just walking through, you know, it was like hell because they smoke cigarettes. I was like, I'm grateful I put the cigarettes down. If the drugs don't kill me, my lifestyle will. What is my lifestyle? What am I choosing to do today that's pertaining to my recovery? Or is other things, am I willing to just sacrifice all kind of shit to say, hey, I put the dope down. You know, I put the drugs down. Now I'm going to the doctor and getting prescribed medication. And, you know, you hear all kind of stuff now. They're in our area talking about they're able to smoke marijuana now because they had this whatever. I'm like, bullshit. What have you been doing thus far? What have you been doing thus far to sustain this so-called illness that you have? Now, all of a sudden, they say you can smoke. Okay, yeah, you tell me I can smoke crack now? You know, it's legal and it's going to cure what? I don't think so. We need to not, you know, always trying to look for a way out. You know, I don't know. If the drugs don't kill me, the lifestyle will. You know, and it's funny because that can go so deep. Lying, stealing, cheating, manipulating. Like I said, a mental breakdown can kill you just as easy as anything else. You know, I could sit there, and I have a real hard time. I'm coming up on 15 years clean, and I have a real hard time with telling the truth about how I really feel, especially to my husband. You know, I still find it. We've been together over 20 years, and we survived the horrors of addiction together, you know, and as a lot of people hook up in recovery, that's not my story. You know, we came in together, and we're still here, and, you know, I do service work and all that stuff. But I still find it hard to say how I really feel for fear that you're not going to like me. I went in and I sat in on the men's rap today. You know, I thought they thought I was going to leave, but I'm not that type of girl. You know, I'm like, yeah, I'll sit right here. And it was really good because two of my favorite IPs, self-acceptance and the triangle self-obsession, and those were the exact two IPs this one kid talked about. I'm like, you know, I hit a jackpot. Damn the women, this is where I need to be. So, you know, and he talked about it, and it talks about in the self-acceptance IP is that we would do anything for anyone just to gain their acceptance and approval. And I had to dig deep and hard with that one. What is my anything? What is the anything that Deborah would do for anyone just to get you to smile, just to get you to be all right? And I did that for many years, an act of addiction with my husband, and I'm just recovering from that stuff today. I'm just now recovering from, like, saying no. I can say no, and my no can mean no. You know, it's still hard. we were supposed to bring up one of his sponsees, and, you know, like a fellow will. And I'm like, ah, no. And we discussed it like 3 weeks ago, and my no meant no 3 weeks ago. But then 2 days ago, he's like, well, what do you think about? I'm like, okay, why are we still revisiting this bullshit? Because I said no 3 weeks ago, but now you're asking me again, and now my feelings have changed. But they really didn't. I didn't have the ability to get honest and say, well, no still means no. Now I'm starting to feel some other kind of different way. And I said, well, yeah, it doesn't matter. But then he saw the look on my face. It's like, no, it shows on your damn face that you don't want this person to come with us. And then I felt bad because he paid and he registered and the whole bit. But guess what? We have another car. Take the other damn car. You know, why are you, you know, the third wheel shit? Where the hell is your girlfriend at? Do something. You know, here you are, you know, tagging along. No, I don't want that. You know, it's all the time. My life is, like, really, really full with that, with a whole lot of stuff. So this is like a getaway for me. It's a getaway for me. So if you see me just sitting back and I'm like, leave me alone. You know what I mean? I'm cool. I'm all right. No cell phone. No doorbell ringing. Nobody's, you know, buzzing you or asking you, or your supervisor's not calling saying because you want to come and do overtime. No, I don't. I just want to go to the little camp place. I just want to chill out. You know what I'm saying? With a lot of people that I don't know. Because then when you see people that you know, it's like, hey, yeah. You know, and then I'm also here. I'm the programming chairperson for the Western New York Regional Convention of Narcotics Anonymous 12, and our convention is going on this November, and I'm actually here to, like, get some different people. You know, I'm tired of the same old people. It's like, what the hell? Are you the only addicts in the world? Why do you guys keep getting these cats? You know, like, they got the, you know, they got a patent on the message carrying and shit. Bullshit. Bullshit. You know, and it's our regional convention. I don't like to go to black conventions. I don't like to go to white conventions. I like to go to Mount Lickna, where you see everybody. It's like, oh shit, this is what I'm talking about, Mount Lickna. I can't wait. Mount Lickna to me is like my world convention. And I've gone to a world convention. But Mount Lickna is by far like, you know, you just get to see a mixture of the whole bit. You know, it's like in our area, we're divided. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, it's like, oh, group over here, over there. I truck right on out there to the other meetings, and it's like, yep, I'm here. Here I go. Because guess what? The disease doesn't discriminate. You know, we're more alike than we are different. We can focus on our differences, but damn it, the literature says focus on our similarities. You know, so I go by what the literature tells me, you know. So a lot of things can kill me. Guess what? If I don't do the step work, I die. I die a spiritual death. If the drugs don't kill me, the lifestyle will. If I'm sitting in a 12-step program and I'm not doing 12 steps, why in the fuck am I here? Why am I here? I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting my time. I could probably be going out and doing something else. So why not me give this stuff a shot? You know? Guess what? I'm sitting with me, and I'm engulfed in all these feelings that have just, like, mustered and festered, and, you know, and it's like, if my dilemma is spiritual in nature, then I need to get to the dilemma. I need to get to the solution of the dilemma. Probably some step work. They say the steps is the solution to the disease thinking. If I'm at a dis-ease, if I'm at a discontent, if I'm, you know, all the stuff that makes up the disease of addiction, the self-loathing, you know what I'm saying, the isolation, the degradation, in recovery, that shit can kill me. That can kill me. If I don't be honest with me and tell you the truth, that can kill me. I need to start working on Deborah and finding out what's going on with me. Why is it that I don't want to tell the truth? Because I'm fearing that you're not going to like me. You're not going to like me. You're not going to be around me. I can't say that. But guess what? Then that makes me a people pleaser. What is a people pleaser? A liar and a manipulator. That's all. So am I lying to me? I'm lying to self. To my own self, be true. You know, that kind of stuff will take me right up out of here. Or then I'll sit at home and I'll isolate and I don't want to be bothered with nobody. That shit can kill me. The disease wants me dead by any means necessary. It does not want me to be here sharing what I'm sharing. And the other thing it talked about in the self-acceptance pamphlet, you know, and if they really knew me, you know, they wouldn't like me as I wouldn't like myself or something to that effect. You know, so if I tell you no and let my no mean no, then you're not going to like me. You know, I suck my thumb. I suck my thumb for 40 years. I'll be 43 years old September the 27th. Suck my thumb for 40 years. Made a decision, right? And then applied action to the decision. Made a decision to put braces on because I didn't like the way my teeth looked. And I have not sucked my thumb. It'll be 3 years in September on my birthday. You know, and that's only through this program. And the braces come off on the 4th of October. I am ever so grateful. You know what I mean? And people are looking at me like, oh, you put braces on. I did. I did. Sure. Of course I did. Because I have enough esteem. You know, and you guys taught me to have self-esteem today. You know, so I was able to do that. I was able to do that. You know, my lifestyle. I stuck my thumb. They said addicts tend to live secret lives. I was with my husband for over 20 years. He did not know I sucked my thumb every night. Faithfully, that's how I got to bed. He thought he put me to bed. Wrong. Thumb did. You didn't. Thumb did. You know, so get it out your head, big guy. Thummy. You know, so it's funny how, you know, we as addicts, we tend to live secret lives, and you know, we fooled many people, but most of all, we fooled ourselves. You know, so I'm just, like, real grateful for this process. You know, it's truly an uphill journey for me. Talking earlier, another struggle, another surrender. So, you know, when I find myself in a fetal position or ready to give up or ready to throw in the towel with being a programming chair, because it gets overwhelming. You know, you have people that are on the committee, and they don't understand the first tradition. You know, it's like, okay, what is the first tradition? It's, personal recovery depends on innate unity. It says it loud and clear. Personal recovery, that means I have to get some. Before I can have unity with you, I have to have some personal recovery going on here. But no, I want to bring my personality to the committee. And, you know, it's hard when you have people on these committees and they're not doing the work. And then you're forced to apply a spiritual principle all the damn time. It gets real boring. You know, it's like, okay, can somebody else please apply some shit? Can somebody else please show that they're working a program too? You know, it's not just about the one or two people that are always thrust into service. You know, so I don't know. It's a real honor that Art even called me. I haven't seen him yet. You know, he's a real good guy. I knew Art and Barbara. I met Barb when she first moved to the Buffalo area, and her son, and Art and I basically got clean around the same time. And, you know, it's just a real good honor to still be connected and to still have other people that are still connected. You know, I go around the globe, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous. I can always meet somebody that knows someone, that know my sponsor, you know, because she speaks all over everywhere. I'm like, that's good for you. They fly you in and they set you up and you're always the main speaker. Well, would you want to come to a workshop, sponsor? You know, it doesn't matter to me. I don't give a shit. Come to a workshop because we're not flying you in and we're not going to set you up. So we'll see what you want to do. You know, and then it lets you know who people are. You know, I have people calling me up actually saying, I'll do a main speaker, but I can't do a workshop. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, all right, I'll call you back. You know, asshole with this ego. Come on now. You know, you have addicts. You know, everybody wants to be famous, you know, in an anonymous program. Let it go. You know, so I don't know. But I have to really be careful about my lifestyle and then about the people that I choose to be around in recovery, you know, because it's like, and I really don't like to judge anyone, but a lot of times you got to take another look, so to speak, and say, hey, guess what? I really don't want to be a part of this with you. You know, there are people that are doing a lot of very, very unspiritual things. And again, you know, when your pain gets great enough is when you'll probably change and do something different. It's not up to me. However, I am responsible for my personal recovery. You know, so if I need to remove myself from a situation, then that's what I need to do. You know, I don't give sponsees rides when I know that they're selling drugs. You know, but can I sponsor you? I probably can't judge you. You know, because again, the steps is the solution to the disease thinking. So it gets real tricky when it comes to stuff like that. you know, this guy and I had a conversation yesterday, and it was real interesting because it got real, you know. And again, we get each other's perspective on things. That's what a sponsor is all about for me, getting one's perspective on the steps, traditions, concepts, and things of that nature. Let me hear your view, you hear mine, we bounce it off, boom, there we go. But as far as people, you know, living, sharing clean and living dirty, you know, to me, a sin is a sin. It doesn't matter what you do, as far as I can see it. And that's just, again, that's just my perspective on it. You know, it doesn't make me a better person to judge the thoughts of others. It just don't. And the literature tells me that as well. You know, so I have to be real careful. And again, I always have to go in and find out what's going on with Deborah and why is she wanting to commit suicide. You know, why is she contemplating like, oh, I don't want to be here anymore? Why is she always talking about I'm ready to leave Narcotics Anonymous? It's not working for me anymore. You know, things of that nature. So I just have to say to myself, you know, well, talks about it in our symbol, you know, doing the right thing for the right reason, you know, and 9 times out of 10 when I do, you know, I feel better. I feel better about myself. It gives me some self-esteem. Speaking of self-esteem, I was hired for this one job. I have a daycare that I run out of my house. But I was hired for this one job. It was a counselor aide position because I don't have any degree from anywhere. It took me 5 times to get my GED in the program in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I took the test over and over and over, and I finally got it. You guys taught me how to keep coming back, and I did. You know, I bought a house, opened a daycare, and I ended up getting a job where I went to detox. You know, and they hired me, and I was like this, they gave me a title as a counselor aide. You know, you needed a GED and a driver's license and some clean time. They expect you to be clean, you know, and I had those things, so that was cool. And I guess I thought I was a counselor. You know, they said counselor aide, so I thought I had some type of degree, and I'm around there trying to counsel the girls, and then they're going back telling their counselors that, hey, Ms. Deborah said, and they're like, you know what? You're fired. You know, I'm fired, and that kind of crushed me because that was the first time anybody had ever given me a chance. You know, and I thought that was like a real job. You know, it dealt with recovery, and you know, I detoxed. It was my detox center, and you know, I'm driving the girls to meetings, making sure they get to their appointments. I felt real good about myself. I had some esteem then, and then when they fired me, it went down again, and I didn't tell anybody in my area. Luckily, I was able to reach out to other women in other areas because that's who I told. I was so ashamed to tell anybody that they fired me. This was back in 2003. I worked there for a year, 2002, 2003. They fired me. And had the nerve. So I go back to the alumni every year. I go back and I still show up. Even after they fired me, I would still dress up and hold my head up. I was like, oh, hi, Mr. Gallagher. And, da, 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 and how's everything? Everything's good. Well, last year, everything wasn't so great when my husband fell off a scaffold and had to have a plate in his neck, had to have surgery, and we didn't have medical insurance. So things weren't so great. So when he asked me, I was able to tell the truth. You know, I was able to let him know exactly what was going on. And he says, how's everything? And I'm like, oh, God, dang, I don't have this. And he's like, oh, my God, calm down, get back on me. And I said, I need a job. And they hired me again. So I'm working back at the same place, but with the adults now. I'd rather deal with the adults than to deal with the teenagers. The adults, you know, we can see eye to eye. Sit your ass down. You know what to do. Shut the hell up. You know, them teenagers, oh, she just said that to me. I can't take her. I can't take you either. You know, so you know what I mean. I can't take you either. So now they hired me back, you know, and that's like an awesome thing that I had enough courage to even say, can I get my job back? You know, you guys hiring? So now, you know, they have other, you know, it's a huge little thing in our area where I work. You know, they do a lot. And now I'm so grateful. I used to go to the job with all this stuff on and these diamonds and wearing a mink and driving and stuff. I don't wear shit. You would think I was camping. Now see, the clothes that I wear to work are real camp clothes. Big old sweatpants, t-shirts, nothing. It's like you guys aren't getting shit on Miss Deborah this time. I've learned. You know, it's like you fail the test, you get the lesson. So, you know, I'm real grateful that, arrogance lost me my job. Humility got it back. You know, I lost it by being very arrogant and cocky and bitchy and, oh, you can't tell me shit. I have this much clean time. I drive this. I'm thinking everything was outer. You know, and the most important things in life aren't things at all. And I had to realize that, you know, now I wear the stuff that costs $2 or $3, and it's like fun stuff. It's like fun stuff to me. Instead of last year, I was kind of worried about, oh my God, I wore my diamonds out in the park. Oh, asshole, why'd you wear them? It's a camp out, for Christ's sake. Look, give yourself a break. Give yourself a break. Not even give somebody else a break. Give you a damn break. Where the hell you think you are? Loosen up. Lighten up. You know, and again, going within, finding out what's going on with Deborah, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, so I'm just really like spiritually refreshed and glad to be alive. I think he talks about that in the Works on Why, 11th step or somewhere along there. I don't know. I'm not really a good quoter on the book. And, you know, you have some people that can go take it to the page. And it's the third paragraph on page 52. And this is exactly what it says. It's meaningless unless I live it. It means nothing to me unless I apply it to my everyday life. And that's the whole thing. Here lately, I've been really forced to, you know, I just recently changed sponsors. Integrity is real big for me in sponsorship. You know, I need to know that, and no, we're not perfect people, and yes, we fall short. We don't fall short of each other. When I lay down and do a 10th step at night is when I have to, like, redo that, live in a program just for the day type of thing, and what could I have done or said differently and things of that nature. With the God of my understanding, it's not with another human being unless I need to promptly admit the wrong. You know, other than that, it's like, hey, but I need to know that you got some integrity when I go to doing some stuff with you. I don't need to know that, guess what, you're all over the place with my stuff. I probably need to make another decision. You know, and the third step taught me that, you know, making a decision, you can always change it and make a new one. And I did that. And I have a sponsor that lives in Philadelphia. And it's working out so far. I did my first step with her again. And I just mailed her my first step, first tradition. I just mailed her second step, second tradition. And just waiting to go over that with her when we both can find the time to do so. I don't know. It's not too much more I could really go on with. I have a pretty healthy lifestyle today outside of eating what I want to eat when I think I can eat it. Because guess what? When I was in active addiction, I thought I was having a heart attack with the drugs. Well, I had that same experience with overeating with food. I had to call the ambulance the same way to, like, I feel like I'm having a heart attack. You know, same way some years back. I'm like, wow, had nothing to do with the drug. Had nothing to do with the drug. The sugar can be a drug for me. The sugar can be a drug for me. It looks no different than the cocaine and the flour and the heroin. And if you put it all on the table, guess what? Which one are you going to sniff? Whichever one comes first. You know, because they all look the damn same. Tell me they're all dope, I'm sniffing them all. You know, so it doesn't matter. So I have to be real careful as to the things that I do today, that especially are contrary to a healthy lifestyle. You know, again, with my son, I've learned how to talk to him and not at him. He's the only child that I have. I had complications giving birth to him. I'm not having any more children. I got one shot at it. I understand that God is lending him to me. All those things. I'm very fearful when my son rides a bike. You know, I'm very fearful when he says he wants to go to the corner store. I'm very fearful that something is going to terribly happen to this kid, and I need to let go and let God. Same situation, you know. I've learned how to talk to him because I can get pretty neurotic, if you will, and, you know, start pulling my hair out and screaming and going to this tension tantrum, you know, like it talks about in the triangle. You know, we don't grow up. You know, well, it says either we grow up or we die. You know what I'm saying? So I need to grow up and learn how not to, like, react to everything that I hear. I need to learn how to respond in a healthy, mature manner. You know, I just do, you know. So the lifestyle that I live today is a pretty pleasant lifestyle. You know, I haven't had a cigarette in over 10 years. For that, I'm truly grateful. We're vegetarian now. You know, I drink a lot of soy milk and I eat a lot of salmon, and I try to work out to the best of my ability, or maybe it's not the best of my ability. I probably could do better. You know, but I do. They say another struggle, another surrender. So it's like, okay, pick your ass back up and get back on the tread type of thing. I try not to swear as much. Not that I don't like cussing, because fuck, I do. You know what I'm saying? I do. But I don't have to do it all the time. Every other word, You know, I couldn't talk to anyone at any given time without cursing. You know, now it's like I pick and choose, and when I do, I do. It's okay. You know, and a lot of times I get the same reaction. People laugh because everybody can identify, oh, yeah, fuck that shit. You damn right. Yeah. You know, and it's all right, and it's okay. But I know when not to curse. I bet you that. I don't curse in front of my boss or coworkers, you know, things like that. Or my son. Or my son. He needs to know that he don't have to be raised in a house that they swear all the time, or they're fighting, or they're yelling. You know, we can talk and we can sit down and have a normal conversation. You know, that's the lifestyle that. And then he sees me going to see my mom. I have one kid. When I get old, because I will get old, this shit will be dropped real soon. If it's not dropping already, you know, it'll be, you know, it'll go to something else. And then I'll try and think about Botox and, you know, stretching some shit out and pulling some stuff up and lift this and tuck that and here we go. And then next time you guys will see me all here, hi, it's Darren, I'm an addict. You know, I don't want to do that either. So I need to kind of take care of what's going on with the body right now, you know, mind and spirit. You know, it's threefold, you know. So I'm here and I'm glad I'm here. Glad we made it here safe. The last time we were here last year, it rained really bad. And you could hardly see because the rain was coming down so hard. And it was only through God's grace that we made it. You know, I think about people all the time that just don't make it. You know, that just don't make it. That die from the horrors of addiction. You know, there's people that die every other day in our area from the horrors of addiction. It's like, oh, yeah, she came through an A and she just got a bag of bad dope. You know, and then you go and look in the coffin and it's like, wow, is that her? Doesn't even look like her. She was 23 years old. She looked like she's 95. This is how bad, you know, and it's just terrible. It's just terrible, you know. So I have to be real careful. And a lot of times when I think that I want to give up, you know, I think again. I take another look and say, life is not so bad. Life is not so bad without the use of drugs, you know, or anything that can alter the mood. I have to be careful. A mind altering substance, you know, whatever I obsess and compulse over, whether it's food, sex, money, work, you know, shopping, you know, that stuff can kind of have me real messed up if I let it get the best of me and I'm obsessing and compulsing over it. It's no different than a drug, you know. So I need to kind of always go within and find out what's going on with Deborah, good, bad, or indifferent, you know. I can no longer blame people, places, and things for my dilemma, for my disease, for my discomfort, you know, as much as I would like to. You know, I was mad that I didn't get in the Harmony House. I wanted to go into the Harmony House. We were in the Harmony House last year. Why are we over here this year? They didn't send us a registration. I don't want to be here. You know, I'm back into that child mode again. You know what I mean? It's like, grow up. Grow up. You know, grow up. Take some responsibility. You assholes didn't register until late. Now you want all this stuff at your feet. So now, after being over here where the tents are, I look at my husband and I say, oh, next year when we come, we're pitching a tent. I don't even want to go to Harmony House. They look like they're having a damn good time in the tent, you know? And it's just, you know, just to broaden my thoughts on things. You know, I'm thinking I need to be where the stove is. It's like that's part of the problem. You know, y'all want to cook something, you know, so I don't know. I'm just real grateful. That's it. Thanks.
I would like to introduce, let's give another round of applause for Deborah. She did a great job. I'm going to introduce our second speaker. His name is Jason. I'm not sure where his home group is or anything like that. Choices today, as he said. So here's Jason, guys.
Come on, thank Jason.
And first and foremost, I want to tell you guys what a creep my sponsor is. He's the guy doing the tapings right now. I'm really not liking him too much. I hate being put on Front Street like this. No, the truth is, I love the guy. I love him with all my heart. He knows that this is part of recovery. You know, we got to face our fears in order to grow in this program. We got to get up here and we got to make ourselves vulnerable. But anyway, I'd like if you would indulge me in a prayer. I'm going to try to get the hell out of the way because you're not going to want to hear anything that comes out of this mouth. So a moment of silence, please. Now, with your eyes closed, I would ask if you keep your eyes closed. I want you to think back to that your own personal time in your life when you were ever so desperate. When you wanted to quit using drugs and you didn't know there was a better way of life. And you're hopeless, helpless. And you cried out for help to a God of your understanding, or maybe at that time it was a God of your misunderstanding, not knowing if he was listening and not even knowing if he existed. And I want you to open your eyes and look around this room. God is good. God is good. And I pray that way for two reasons, because I like to remember where I come from. I like to remember those hopeless, helpless, desperate times, because that's part of that lifestyle that I came from. And it also reminds me how far God has brought me. Because it's not by my choosing that I'm here, standing in front of this fine group of people, sharing my experience, strength, and hope. You know, I came from, I was sitting there, this is how this all happened. I'm down there doing a taping down there at the Grove, and Chuck comes busting up. I just heard a really good speaker down there on step 6 and 7. The second speaker was getting ready to start, and he's like, come here. So I come rushing over, and we start running up the hill. I need your help up here with something. And we're halfway up the hill, and he's like, well, how's if the drugs don't kill you, the lifestyle will, how's that sound? And I'm like, you creep. So, you know, I had this, my heart was already pounding, and I get dropped with that anxiety, so it's going to take a minute for me to calm down. But anyway, like I said, I'm an addict named Jason, and, you know, I'm so grateful to be here at this retreat. Once again, this is the third time here. I keep coming back every year. It's like a real serene place. I love it up here. But, you know, the lifestyle I was living that went along with my drugs was just, it did kill me. It actually did kill me twice. You know, I OD'd twice. Found dead, blew in the yard by my grandmother. You know, that sort of thing. What jails, institutions, and death, they say it all with that little phrase. In all the jails I think I spent, I added it up one time, it was like 2 years and 4 months of bouncing in and out of county jails all over the place, and I hit about a half a dozen of them. And I went from having nothing, I mean absolutely nothing, to having a lot today, all because of Narcotics Anonymous. And I mean, and not just talking material things, I'm talking about the inside stuff, because it is an inside job around here. I remember waking up those days. I had no money. I had no job because I was not employable. I couldn't keep a job. Actually, my job turned into retail theft. You know, in and out of every store there was. And Desiree's laughing. She's identifying. It's good to see you sitting there, too, by the way. Coming back around. And that used to be my occupation. You know, I wake up every day. I go to the nearest Walmart, the nearest Sears, and get what I had to get. And then go fence it and cop some dope. And, you know, you can only continue on that path for so long before you're caught. And then once you get so many, you spend some time in jails and prisons. And I remember there was a particular time, a particular instance that's coming to my mind right now, so I'll share it. There was a guy that I got arrested with. It was my first time in the penitentiary. Not penitentiary, in the jail. I'm already exaggerating up here. And we got thrown in, we got put on different blocks. We're going to our arraignment 2 weeks later, and we get put in the holding cell together, and he's like, oh, you're still here. And I said, yeah, I'm still here. He said, I thought you got out. I said, no, I'm still here. I said, hey, man, he was a old head, kind of like a guy that I looked up to. He taught me how to shoot dope and cook up some crack, and he taught me how to steal from stores, basically, you know. And I asked him, I said, are you going to do this shit when you get out? You're going to keep doing this shit. And he said, just one more time. And I was like new and young in the game, and I thought he meant, yeah, I'm thinking he means one more time, he'll be back at it again. Well, no, he meant one more time. You know, he knew what he was doing when he got out. He killed himself. And so from that point on, it was like one of those moments of clarity where it was just like, why him and not me type of thing. So I kind of rolled with that. I wasn't successful from that point. But it's always been in my mind, that tape always plays. You know, I could stand up here and probably, you know, like we all could, name a dozen people that we were close to that are no longer here. And here we are. And somehow, I'm standing up here in front of you guys sharing this story, whatever's coming out of my mouth. That's just a miracle to me. It really truly is. Because I was that hopeless, helpless, desperate guy who just didn't seem, I was like I was going anywhere, you know, suicidal thoughts, that type of thing. And I go from that, okay, I get clean. My first rehab, I'll go over that real quick. My first rehab, I went to 3 rehabs before I got it. And the first rehab, you know, like we all do, we get there, we get clean. The first thing we pick up is a warm body. You know, little honey named, I ain't going to put her name out there. This is being recorded, but she was good looking. We'll just put it that way. And that was the first thing that appealed to me. Second rehab, I'm back for more and thinking, okay, there's the 12 steps. I read it. I got it. It wasn't like that, man. I had no idea that you had to, like, internalize these steps and learn to use them in your life, you know. Now, my third rehab was a little different. I didn't want nothing to do with no women. Nothing except recovery. And that's what I chose to do for the first 3 months of my recovery. Of course, I followed the 90 meetings in 90 days. Got a sponsor, and most importantly, humbled myself and took any suggestion that was thrown my way. And somehow this is working. When I go from that lifestyle, and in that lifestyle, you know, I was living, I always shared, I took on, you know, they say if the drugs won't kill you, the lifestyle will. Well, the lifestyle I was living, I took on like this bull god effect. Like, I don't know if you guys ever heard of Kid Rock singing, Kid Rock songs. I know Desiree has. And you know, it's like that devil without a cause, rebel without a cause type of attitude that I had. And I carried that for probably from like the years of 18 and up to like 30. And that damn near killed me. You know, I prided myself on... you know, you get in that song, you get a feeling of peace from a long, slow high as I sit in a chair and watch life go by. That shit was like cool to me, you know. It was a good day if I got to sit in my chair and nod off. That was a good day. Good drugs, good day. No drugs, bad day. So ask no questions and don't tell no lies. I got big old pupils and bloodshot eyes. I'm on the brink, if you know what I mean. It's a 12-step program, couldn't keep me clean. It couldn't keep me clean because I didn't want it to keep me clean. Plain and simple. I didn't want it bad enough. Wasn't willing to throw away. There's that creep right now walking back in the door. But anyway, I got out of that last rehab and I just had enough. And like I said, I was taking everybody's suggestions. And somewhere along the way, I started working some steps. I developed a very loving and caring relationship with a lot of men in my life today. And for me, that's where recovery's at. It's support. You know, the very first sentence of step 2 in the basic text says support is the key to ongoing recovery, and it truly is. You know, we can't do this alone. And the first step I had to come to terms with that what I really had was a feeling management problem. I didn't know how to manage my own feelings. And the only way to manage them is to talk yourself through them with another recovering addict. You know, sometimes that power greater than for me is more than just another person. Sometimes it's a piece of literature. Sometimes it's pain because I don't want to do nothing until it hurts bad enough. And in step 3, my mouth is so dry. In step 3, the most important relationship that I've built in this program so far is with the God that I understand. Now I went from this bull God persona, this tough guy exterior, I built these muscles and, you know, so you can't see how bad I'm actually hurting on the inside. I went from that lifestyle to this loving and caring person that I am today, that I like to think I am, and I'm told I am. And that's like a major change for me. You know, like I said, the most important relationship that I have in my life today is with the God of my understanding. And every day I wake up and I do go through my little ritual of my prayer and meditation. Because without that, I'm lost. And you know, this relationship's kind of like, the best way that I know how to describe it is, hey, what's up, Mike? Good to see you here, buddy. Finally wake up from your nap. I love that guy back here. He's one of those power greater than that I talk to with at least a couple times a week. And the best way to describe the relationship with the God that I understand is like that of a child. You know, I just had a one-year-old daughter, or she just turned one. I had a daughter a year ago. And you know how a newborn baby, they're born happy, joyous, and free. You know, they have no cares in the world. No money, property, prestige diverting them from their primary purpose. Their primary purpose is to be happy, joyous, and free. And when the pain gets great enough, the baby cries out to the God of her understanding, which is me or her mother. And I have that kind of relationship with the God of my understanding today. You know, because there's a lot of stuff that I go through in life that you people just aren't around. You know, and I'm faced with certain situations. Hell, 2 weeks ago, I was cleaning out a house, and I found a bag of cough syrups. And, you know, like any good addict, I had to look in them. Started with codeine elixir, then I went to hiking in, and I pulled out a bottle of Tussinex. I haven't seen that stuff for years. And to tell you the truth, I don't know if I'd have made it through that if I didn't have the relationship I have with the God of my understanding. Thank you so much. 1%. You're making amends. Oh, man. Anyway, enough of the old lifestyle. Let me tell you about the new lifestyle. Since I made this decision to roll with the God of my understanding, I've acquired a house. I have 5 beautiful children. I have two girls from my wife's past relationship, and I have 2 boys from a previous relationship, and we just had a daughter together. I'm repairing relationships with my family. I shouldn't even say repairing. They're better than they've ever been. You know, and whoever says that you know, what's his name was up here earlier, Jason, talking about how once we get that light, that NA glow, it rubs off on other people, and it truly does. I'm rebuilding the relationships with my sons because they're damaged. You know, I got a very angry, bitter 12-year-old. But he's seeing change in me. You know, I can't tell him how much I'm changing. He has to see it. And I need to realize that. Thank you. I get stuck up there now.
Yeah, it is.
I probably got it all over my face.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know what? You know, I'm going to leave it there. You know why? Because that's the greatest thing that this program has given me today. The freedom from self-obsession. You know, there's been a time where, you know, it was about what I looked or what I was wearing or what I was driving or who I was with or who I knew. And it's no longer like that today. Mm-hmm. You know, I come in sandals. If I take my socks off, I got a farmer's tan down there. I got white feet. I don't care. You guys can laugh at me today. I can laugh with you. You know, there was a time when I came up in here at the beginning. If you'd have laughed at me, you better choose a weapon because we're going to get it on. But anyway, I'm repairing these relationships with my sons. I got 2 little beautiful girls. I got this woman at home that is just dynamite. And what she has seen in me, I will never figure out. You know, we had this conversation last week about some friends of ours had broke up. And you know, they did the old cliche, well, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. And I said, Lisa, that's my wife's name. I said, Lisa, what the hell does that mean exactly? Can you explain this to me? And she says, well, you know, like, I love my ex-husband because he's the father of my children, but I'm not in love with him. I'm like, okay, but what is in love? And she said, you know that funny feeling. Like, I get that funny feeling sometimes when I think about what we've gone through or what we've experienced together and, you know, just that good feeling inside. And I said, that's corny. What I really was thinking was that's something special. You know, and I shared later on that evening that exact same story, and I shared about the experience, my experiences with her, because I get that same feeling a lot. And one particular time, other than, like, I see her, she's a great mom. That's her most attractive feature to me. She's just a very special mom. But when my daughter was born, my 1-year-old daughter, she was laying on the table, you know, she had a C-section, she got it wide open, and we didn't want to know what, the baby was going to be. So it was going to be a surprise. And the doctor yelled out it was a girl. And, you know, she's lying there, gutted wide open, and she turns to me back like this, and she said, "Is that okay?" And you know, when I think about that, I'm trying not to tear up now. When I think about that, it's like so special to me, you know, that to be able to have that those kind of relationships in my life today. The hell with that old lifestyle. I like this one. I got these two daughters that they're stepdaughters, but they're daughters to me. They're my daughters, man. They're my girls. I live with four women, and it's a beautiful thing. You know, we went to Kennywood last year, and Abby, she's 7 years old. We walked in the gates, and they got that thing, the Sky Coaster. Anybody know what that is? They take you up, and you pull the ripcord, and you just free fall. And I said, "Abby, we're going to go on that." And she said, "Oh, no, we're not," and she ran up in front of me, you know, running from me. So I said, "Okay." So we're standing in line about half an hour later for a roller coaster, and I said, "You know what, Ab? I said, to tell you the truth, I'm scared to death of that thing. I don't want to ride it either. I just know that every time I face one of my fears and come through it on the outside, I feel better about myself in here." Well, you know, that seven-year-old girl processed that. I seen her processing for about 10 minutes. 10 minutes later, she says, "Jason, I want to ride that thing." So we went and paid our tickets. In our takeoff time, you get a flight time. Our flight time was like at 7 o'clock at night. And right before we went on, I was thinking to myself, what the hell did I get myself into? What was I thinking, you know? And so I said, "Ab, let's go around the corner. We need to pray." And, you know, we said a short little prayer. You know, "God, help us through this. Let's see us safe on our journey," and this and that. And we got up there and we rode the thing, and she got off and she's all prideful, and everybody's telling her, "You're such a brave little girl. You're such a brave little girl." But about a half an hour later, we're standing in line for something else, and she said, "You know what, Jay? I really think God was listening." And, you know, to be able to teach that kind of thing to a child, okay, get her to rely on something other than a person. You know, because I was never taught those things growing up. I lived in an abusive household. You know, people were neglected. I'm not going to get into all that. I just know that I don't hold on to that stuff anymore. I'm just trying to give you guys an idea of where I come from. That lifestyle damn near did kill me. I got this other little daughter, Ellie. Man, is she a handful. You want to talk about an addict in the making. Obsessive and compulsive. But she's just like me, and I feel that God put her in my life because of that. Because he knew I'd be the one person that can relate to her and help her out. I got to tell one more quick story before I go. I had my 7-year-old Abby's birthday party was last week. And she had a sleepover. There was 15 cheerleaders at my house. And yeah, it was pretty chaotic. So when I walked outside and they were all rehearsing their cheers, and they sounded like it was like high school level or something, you know, I was like really impressed. And then my little 1-year-old daughter goes up there and she's doing her thing, trying to get in with them. And it's like, man, I don't want to trade this life for anything. So I'm going to shut up now. Hope I spoke long enough. I don't know. I'm going to keep calling Chuck a creep until he does something good for me. But I'm a mess. Anyway, I'm going to end with a little poem. I always say it's a little poem, you know, because it helps me break out of that tough guy mold that I've had my whole life from that old lifestyle. And it goes like this, if I don't screw it up. I am you, and you are me, and together we can be happy, joyous, and free. It doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter about your past. The only thing that matters is where we're going. And one day at a time, just for today, we can kick this disease in the ass. I'm an addict named Jason.